How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, well, we've warned you.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
And yourself?
Lovely. It's not hot, not cold, which I love. And yeah, my favorite kind of day. That and podcasting with my best friend, Jen.
Aww. Did you have a good Mother's Day?
Yeah, I didn't do anything, which is my perfect kind of day.
Yeah.
Or another Sunday, as I like to call it. Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah. Probably, you know, just happy to be spending time with mi madre as well.
Yeah. And, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. We didn't do much here, so it's always okay. Nice not to run around.
Yeah. I get
you. But anyway, I've got a lovely little episode for everybody today. And I would like to say that it was researched by our friend Kia Gleason. And this episode, in case you haven't read the title yet, is about the massacre that was at the UCC Community College.
Oh, I didn't even see this. I never saw it come across, so now I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it was in 2015, so not that long ago, 6 years ago. She has a special connection to this because her little sister was in the same class just earlier that day.
Oh, that's awful.
So,
coming way too plentiful.
Really scary stuff.
I want to hear it. Let's go.
All right. Ready?
Yes.
And another thing before I start, I just want to add that many of these quotes happened right after the shooting. They're from witnesses. So, of course, when something that is that stressful and horrifying, when you tell the story right after it happens to when you tell the story like 6 months to a year afterwards, you kind of get the gist of what you actually said when it was all happening, but you don't really remember fully. So when I quote quotes in here, they're quotes that the survivors had said, and whether they actually happened as they said them, I don't know. But it's just as I'm quoting from the newspaper articles or whatever, because if you read an article that happened right after the incident and then you read an article that happened a year after the incident, that same survivor, the quote will be different, right?
That makes sense, yeah.
I said, stop, put that down. Then they say that right after it happened, and then the same witness could say, I told him, no, don't do this, blah, 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 you need to put that down. You know how things change.
Yes, yeah.
So
not
I just,
exactly. It's,
right, and I only say this, everybody knows this, but I only want to say this because depending what article you read, the quotes are different, everything's... And I just don't want anybody coming after me and saying, you did this wrong.
Mm-hmm. Everybody sees things differently and hears things differently. That's, you know,
right.
Part of the human experience.
Best intentions by everyone. So you ready?
I'm ready.
Since the Columbine shooting in 1999, many schools and institutions in the United States now hold active shooter drills. Per the NEA, which is the National Education Association, in the 2016-17 school year, over 4.1 million students in the United States had participated in at least one active shooter drill. Lockdowns and active shooter drills are now the normal. School mass shootings only account for 2% of the 36,000 or so gun deaths in the United States. So I just want to put that in there. That's still a lot of deaths on our students.
It's unbelievable. It should be the safest place in the world.
You would think. On October 1st, 2015, nine students attending the Umpqua Community College would be included in that statistic, and other students on campus would now know the true terror of coming close to death. UCC is not your average community college filled with young people fresh out of high school. In fact, most of the UCC students are adults, the average age being 38 years old. Most people at the community college are furthering their education after being in the workforce for most of their adult lives. Amongst the students that attend are aspiring nurses, engineers, and those looking to make the next big step in their career. The UCC website states it's, quote, a picturesque campus on the North Umpqua River Valley. Umpqua Community College prides itself in a peaceful, safe atmosphere and year-round recreational activities.
8183 to back, copy active shooter at UCC 1140 Umpqua College Road.
So we have a report of one person shot, UCC 1140 Umpqua College Road, an active shooter.
UCC, this is going to be the Snyder Hall. Somebody is outside one of the doors, shooting through the door. There is a female in the computer lab. We do have one female that has been shot at this time.
1174, medical aid. This is for an active shooter at UCC. 1174, medical aid. We have a report of one person shot. UCC, 1140, Umpqua College Road, an active shooter.
What you just heard was the call that came into Douglas County Emergency Communications 911 at 10:28 a.m. on October 1st from Snyder Hall on the UCC campus. Among the morning, students on the campus of UCC were in the middle of their class when they heard a gunshot coming from a hallway. Later, these students would find out that that was just a warning shot. FYI, I just want to say this was only the fourth day of a fall term and just the second day of classes, of this writing class that they're about to go in. As adrenaline started pumping through the students' veins, 26-year-old Christopher Chris Harper Mercer burst through the door of the classroom called Snyder 15. The students were in the middle of their writing class. He was dressed in black with body armor. Now, he was normally in this class, so some of the students recognized him. But as he came in, he turned his attention to the assistant professor, Lawrence Levine, and shot him at point-blank range. One witness claims that they heard Harper Mercer say, quote, I've been waiting to do this for a really long time. Then he ordered everyone on the classroom to get on the ground. When speaking to ABC News, student Hannah Miles recounted the events of that day as she was in the classroom next door. Quote, we heard a really loud pop. A barrage of shots were fired, one right after the other, and we just started running for our lives. Chris Harper Mercer was armed with 6 fire guns, with at least one of those being a long gun, meaning like a rifle, not a pistol, just something that has a long barrel. Only 2 of these, a Glock 19 and a Taurus PT-24-7, were used during the attack. Besides having a small arsenal, he also had body armor and a large amount of ammunition, which showed the police that Chris may have come prepared to do bigger things than what actually happened, possibly getting involved into a gunfight.
They usually do.
After killing Loris Levine, Harper Mercer turned to his fellow students and, with a gun in each hand, forced the students to huddle in the middle of the classroom. Harper Mercer pointed to Matthew Downing and said, quote, hey, kid with the glasses, you're the lucky one. I will not shoot you if you give this to the cops. Matthew Downing would later tell ABC News, quote, I stood up and he pointed the gun at me, and this was the moment that I thought I was going to die. He paused for a second and then handed the envelope to me and said to sit in the very back seat and face him. What Harper Mercer gave Matthew was a USB stick inside of a manila envelope. Sitting in the back seat of the classroom, Matthew watched helplessly as fellow students were gunned down. Harper Mercer then picked 2 students and asked them what religion they practiced. It's unclear what their answer was, but it didn't really matter. Harper Mercer then gunned them down moments after the words left their mouth. Some witnesses have stated he asked the students if there was any Christians among the group, to which some of the students said yes. Chillingly, he addressed the Christian students directly, saying, quote, good, I'm going to send you to God. You're going to see God in just 1 second.
That's brutal.
When another student came forward and told them that they were Catholic, Harper Mercer replied, quote, "Thank you for standing up for your beliefs," before shooting him down. He even laughed as he watched one of the students die in front of him. Harper Mercer was very interested in religion, and not in a way where he was looking to devote himself or better his life through the message of a particular church, but in much more of a sinister way. Investigators gained a great deal of insight into Harper Mercer's religious obsession after talking with his friend Cecil Richley. Cecil revealed that Harper Mercer was fascinated with the fact that he was a Luciferian, a branch of Satanism. Harper Mercer was especially interested in black magic and ritual sacrifice, a path that many Satanists do not follow. Cecil revealed that Harper Mercer had confided in him that he had been molested with someone at his church when he was a child, and held a belief that all Christian preachers deserved to be beheaded. It's pretty strong beliefs there.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, Cecil alleges that Harper Mercer sent him a video of ISIS beheading Christians. And I've also read an article at the ALD.org, which is the Anti-Defamation League.
Mm-hmm.
And that article states that although we'll never fully understand why Chris Harper Mercer did what he did, it's not believed that he was actually targeting Christians. And one survivor by the name of Rand McGowan, he was asked if he felt that Harper Mercer was targeting Christians. And he was quoted as saying, "He didn't really, honestly. Obviously, he was asking about religion, but he wasn't really just targeting. He was just kind of saying, oh, since you have a God, you're going to be joining him in a little bit. It wasn't like, I'm targeting you and I'm going to kill you."
Hmm.
By this point, the students were terrified. Three people had already been killed. Many others had been shot multiple times, some as many as seven. Testimony for those who survived this horrific ordeal revealed that Harper Mercer made one student beg for her life before shooting her at point-blank range. Serena Dawn Moore was trying to get back into the wheelchair after he had ordered her down to the ground. He then ordered her to get back up in her wheelchair. And despite doing everything he had asked her to do, he shot her and was killed. One victim was forced to beg for her life in front of him. And she did, and he shot her.
Mm-hmm. See, I think the religion thing, he's playing God. It doesn't matter if they believe in a God, a deity. It doesn't matter. He's deciding if they live or die. So I think that's him.
He's Satanist or the...
playing with that. He's deciding their fate, not the natural course of things.
That's possibly it. We don't know, and we'll never know. For 10 minutes, Chris Harper Mercer held the students of Classroom 15 hostage. Some were shot multiple times but managed to survive, while others weren't so lucky. A few of the hostages played dead so they wouldn't be shot. One survivor believes that she's still alive today. As she was on the ground, another student was shot and fell on her body, so she was partially covered by a dead classmate. And she had his blood all over her. And so she just pretended to be dead. She played dead, and it survived. And she survived that ordeal.
That was smart.
And it's unknown what Harper Mercer had planned next before he was interrupted by the alarms. From the classroom next door, the first gunshot sounded like it was books falling onto the floor. And the professor of that class, Amy Fair, went to check to see what was happening just to make sure everything was okay. She tried to open the door to the adjoining room, which was classroom 15, but when she got to the door, more classrooms started to happen, and they went off faster. And that's when they knew that it wasn't books falling to the floor. It was something more horrible. When it finally dawned on her the severity of the situation, Professor Fair told everyone just to run and to get out as fast as possible. And as students started running out of the school into the parking lot, 30-year-old Chris Mintz went to the library, where staff and teachers had no clue what was happening. When he was running, he heard somebody yell, you know, "Go check into the library, you know, get everybody out." And so he was an Army veteran, he decided that he was the perfect person to do that. So when Chris went to the library to tell everybody what had happened, because they had absolutely no clue, one of the school employees just told the students to hide. Just hide in place. And Mintz said, quote, "Everyone needs to expletive leave," and instructed other students to get outside as quickly as possible using the emergency door. And of course, as soon as they opened it, that alarm set off. Mintz even carried some of the students out the door. Good man right there. Once everyone was outside, Mintz, like I said before, an Army veteran, ran back into the school and then ran into classroom Snyder 15, and just right into the eye of the storm he went. As Mintz was getting people to safety, 59-year-old Kim Saltmarsh Dietz, she just went to see what was going on. She actually thought somebody was shooting off fireworks. When she opened the door to the classroom, Harper Mercer saw her and shot her in the chest, which caused her to fall to the floor. 55-year-old nursing student Sharon Kirkham saw what had happened and took action. She knew immediately to start stress compressions on Kim. As Kirkham was trying to save Kim Dietz's life, Chris Mintz started to come towards her. Now, and this scared the hell out of Sharon Kirkham because she's just sees the shadow go across the door. She's trying to save this woman's life, and she sees the shadow, and she's thinking, well, I'm either going to die by the shooter, you know, who could it be? Luckily, it was Chris. They started talking, and she's like, we got to get out. And Chris is like, you know what? It's too dangerous to leave. The shooter's right next door. And they were there, and Jesus, I couldn't even imagine this. They could hear students cry. They heard somebody beg for their life. They could hear the gun keep going off. You know, like the student would be saying something and then mid-sentence it would stop because the gun went off and they'd fall to the floor.
Horrible.
I couldn't imagine being in that situation. Never want to. Then, with through all that action that they heard in the other room, they heard the sound of police sirens. Chris Mintz stepped out of the room and called out to somebody in the parking lot just to tell the police where exactly the shooter was, you know, just make a beeline to Snyder 15. And then at this moment, too, not only did Chris and Sharon hear the sirens, but Harper Mercer heard the sirens, and he stepped out of the door of the classroom, and he came nose to nose with Mintz. Mintz, being the hero that he is, he attempted to tackle Harper Mercer, but instead he was shot 7 times in the process. Bullets tore through Mintz's femur, his tibia and fibula, which are his legs, just in case you don't know.
I didn't know.
Yeah. One hit his stomach, one lodged in his back, and one shot his hand, and he almost lost his left ring finger. As Chris fell to the ground, Harper Mercer told him, quote, "That's what you get for calling the cops." And Mintz is like, "Yeah, I didn't call the cops, buddy. Sorry." As Mintz laid on the ground, Harper Mercer raised his weapon, and he was ready to pull the trigger to kill Mintz when Mintz said, quote, "It's my son's birthday, man, but do what you got to do."
No, really?
And then, bang, a gunshot rang out, but no bullet hit Mintz. A police officer had discharged his gun and then started charging towards Harper Mercer.
Good.
Which caused him to go back into the Snyder Classroom 15. 10:44 a.m., just 6 minutes after the first 911 call was made and 10 minutes after Harper Mercer had opened fire on the students in Classroom 15, police were finally at the scene and ready to de-escalate the situation. That's not bad, man. 6 minutes?
Pretty
good.
Quick.
That's awesome. Sergeant Joe Caney and Detective Tom Spigoth of the Roseburg Police Department arrived at the scene. Both officers were in plain clothes, and they made the decision to go into Snyder Hall alone. Sergeant Caney and Detective Spigoth saw Harper Mercer over Mintz and rushed down the hall as Harper Mercer went back into the classroom. Harper Mercer, when he went in the room, he started loading his guns, and once he was done, he was then ready to go down fighting. Standing just behind the door, he leaned out to look down the hallway. Seeing the police, Harper Mercer fired several bullets at Caney and Spigoth, who returned fire. One of the police bullets hit Harper Mercer in his right side. Officers continued to exchange fire with the now-injured Harper Mercer until he was too injured to continue. In a true display of cowardice, Harper Mercer retreated back into classroom 15 and shot himself once in the head, ending the horrific ordeal. They always do.
I was hoping that cop would get him.
Well, he did. He did get shot. And one thing that I did read said somebody thought that possibly he bled out. I don't know. Different story. But all we know, there was a gunshot to that. He was killed. And they believe that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
In total, Harper Mercer had killed 9 people and injured 8 more. Actually, 10 people were killed if you count him. Once it was confirmed that the threat had been neutralized, officers moved in and began taking out the injured students to ambulances that were waiting nearby. When an officer went up to Chris Mintz, Chris was still thinking about his son and told the officer, quote, "It's my son's birthday. Please call his mom and tell her that I can't pick him up from school today."
Oh my God, please tell me he lived.
He did.
He did?
He did.
Oh, yeah. Good. Okay.
Matthew Downing, in a state of shock, left the classroom, discarding the USB drive and envelope that Harper Mercer had instructed him to give the police. It wasn't until later that another student saw the envelope in the parking lot and turned it over to the police. Inside, the USB drive contained Chris Harper Mercer's 6-page manifesto, which outlined his motivations and is split into the following sections. 1, my story. 2, blackness and its effect on men. 3, other mass shooters. 4, interests. And 5, facts. He included a facts section. It's written like a college report that you would turn in. It's pretty interesting, and I've got links to it in the show notes. Section 1 opens with the following paragraph. "I have always been the most hated person in the world. Ever since I arrived in this world, I have been under siege from it, under attack from morons and idiots. I write this manifesto so that others will know of my story and perhaps find some solace in it, some kind of inspiration for their own lives. It will contain various sections dealing with my life. It will be divided into sections based on different things. My whole life has been one lonely enterprise, one loss after another. And here I am, 26 years old, no friends, no job, no girlfriend, a virgin. I long ago realized that society likes to deny people like me of these things. People who are elite, people who stand with the gods, people like Elliot Rodger, Vester Flanagan, the Columbine kids, Adam Lanza, suing Joe." He goes on to write, "Just like me, those people were denied everything they deserved, everything they wanted. Though we may not have been born bad, society left us no recourse, no way to be good. I have been forced to align myself with demonic forces. What was once an involuntary relationship has now become an alignment, a service. I now serve the demonic hierarchy. When I die, I will become one of them, a demon, and I will return to kill again and again. I will possess another, and you will know my work by my sign. The pentagram will fly again. Many will ask and pondered what they could have done different now. How could they have prevented this? But you can't. You could never give what I wanted. You would never have done that. Some will, of course, say I had so much to live for, but I don't think so. I had no friends, no girlfriend. I was all alone. I had no job, no life, no successes. What was it that was supposed to happen? What great event was it that was supposed to make me realize how much more there was going for me? But for people like me, there is another world, a darker world that becomes us. For people like all that's left, my success in hell is assured. They will give me the power that I seek. They have always been there, speaking to me on the sidelines, controlling me. It's only fitting that I join them after death. They've told me what to do, showed me the way. And just like me, there will be others. Like Ted Bundy said, we are your sons, your brothers, we are everywhere. My advice to others like me is to go buy a gun and start killing people. If you live in a country like Europe with strict gun laws, either pay the necessary fees or time to get the license or become a serial killer. The world could always use an additional serial killer. Butcher them all in their homes, in the streets, wherever you find them. Every country in the world should be a battleground. From the heart of Africa to the deepest depths of Asia, blood will flow. Fear not the laws of man. When you get to the other side, you will be welcomed. Don't be afraid to give in to your darkest impulses. Human life means nothing. We are what matters. I hope to inspire the masses with this, at least enough to get their passions aroused.
Sounds like a keeper.
He's a thinker. The manifesto also displays Harper Mercer's racism and his outright hatred for black men, as he claimed that he can't get a girlfriend because they are all taken by, quote, black thugs. Yeah. Always blame other people. Always.
All of them. Yeah. He has no personality flaws whatsoever.
I just read a couple paragraphs that would prove differently.
Exactly.
Harper Mercer was mixed race, but claimed that he was, quote, not the same as those he was racist towards. Hmm. He was just a ticking time bomb. There are many missed opportunities and red flags that were totally ignored. In an article from the LA Times, Harper Mercer's mother, Laurel, described her son as, quote, perpetually mad at the world. She told the newspaper in 2017, quote, I mean, he was born angry pretty much. I mean, even the doctor said he was one angry baby. I've never met an angry baby, have you?
No. What's that even mean? Just, I guess he cried all the time or something?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's a weird statement, I think.
She explained to the LA Times journalist Rick Anderson that when he was just 5 years old, he tried to jump out of a moving car and had frequent meltdowns due to his Asperger's syndrome, often becoming physically violent. Mm. It is also known that Harper Mercer suffered from various mental health issues. Huh, you don't say.
Never saw that coming.
Huh. And he was prescribed lithium. He graduated from the Switzer Learning Center, which is a nonprofit school located in Torrance, California. And according to their website, they are, quote, geared for special education students with a range of issues from learning disabilities, health problems, autism, or Asperger's disorder. Those around Chris Harper Mercer commented that his behavior was often odd and violent, which led him to be referred to the school. Since he was odd and violent, he's going to go to that school.
Mm-hmm.
In another article, Laurel Mercer recalled that when her son was 19 or 20 years old, he had pointed a shotgun at her after he became very angry. She explained how she felt so powerless against him and she didn't know how to deal with him. And she said, quote, I would just try to, like, diffuse. I was just too weak or something. I just couldn't do it. Laurel made a shocking statement during an interview where she said, quote, he got entertainment from watching videos of killing on various websites. And, quote, I also gave him money that he could have to use to purchase weapons.
Well,
I believe she also used to shoot with him, too. Harper Mercer was extremely active on the internet and found solace on online message boards such as 4chan, a site that is no stranger to controversy, to say the least. In the days leading up to the UCC shooting, he posted to the R9K board saying, quote, some of you guys are all right. Just don't go to school tomorrow if you're in the Northwest. Happening thread will be posted tomorrow. See you later, space robots. In 2008, Harper Mercer tried to enlist in the U.S. Army. However, he was discharged 5 weeks into basic training after, quote, failing to meet minimum administrative standards. Some sources cite that Harper Mercer was discharged because he had attempted to take his own life at the Fort Jackson Army base, but no official comment has ever been made. Then in 2013, Harper Mercer and his mother, Laurel, moved from their home in Torrance, California, to Winchester, Oregon, after Laurel had gotten a new job there. Despite several warning signs and red flags, Harper Mercer's mother explained how they both were very excited to be moving to an open-to-carry state. Seeing how lonely and isolated her son was, Laurel began taking up shooting with her son. Harper Mercer already owned 9 legal firearms, and Laurel decided to purchase herself an AR-15 to take to the shooting range in what she thought would be a healthy mother and son activity. She regularly wrote on online forums how she and her son had 14 legally owned firearms in the house and that they were always stocked with full magazines. You should never keep a firearm loaded in your house, ever.
They do.
Two rules of owning a gun. One, never keep a loaded gun in your house. Rule two, if you're going to point the gun, you should only point it when you are ready to kill someone. That's it. Those are the two laws. Anyway, you don't point unless you're ready to kill.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt.
Oregon State Police detectives outright asked Laurel if there was any reason she could think of what would drive her son to do this, in which she just replied, quote, "There's nothing I could look back on and say, oh yeah, this, there's the arrow pointing this way, nothing." Laurel simply couldn't wrap her head around why her son would do something so evil, and it was later revealed that Chris Harper Mercer had been placed on academic probation for failing to get his grades above C average, and he was also on the verge of being kicked out because he owed over $2,000 in tuition fees to the school.
$2,000? Mm-hmm.
Boy, we would have been kicked out of that school with that below C average thing. No shame. No shame in that. The Umpqua Community College shooting was the 45th school shooting to have happened in 2015, and 468 people died from mass shootings in that year alone. SandyHookPromise.org reports that since 1970, the U.S. has had 1,316 school shootings, and there has been over 200 plus since the Columbine Massacre in April of 99. In 2018, there's a research paper titled "A Study of the Pre-Attack Behaviors of Active School Shooters in the United States between 2000-2013, which found that 77% of school shooters spent at least a week, if not longer, planning their attack before going ahead with it. Now, before we end this episode, I want to take a moment and we're going to talk about the victims. All right. They deserve our attention because it seems like the shooter always gets the attention. First one is Lucero Aquetas, 19 years old. Lucero dreamed of becoming a pediatric nurse and was one of the 87 students who qualified to become a UCC scholar. Trevin Taylor Anspitch, 20 years old. In a public statement, his family said, quote, "Trevin was one of the most positive young men, always looking for the best life. Trevin was larger than life and brought out the best in those around him. He was the perfect son." Rebecca Ann Carnes, 18 years old. Rebecca was fresh out of high school and just started at the Umpqua Community College, hoping to graduate and become a dental assistant. Quinn Glenn Cooper, 18 years old. Like Rebecca, Glenn had also just graduated from high school. And October 1st, 2015 was only his fourth day in college. That's just
awful, really.
Kim Saltzmarch Dietz was 59 years old. Kim's daughter was also in attendance at Umpqua Community College that day. However, she was not harmed during the shooting. Lucas Ibell, 18 years old. Lucas, a quadruplet, enrolled at UCC hoping to study chemistry. His family explained to CNN that Lucas had graduated from high school with high marks and that he had had a bright future ahead of him. Jason Dale Johnson, 34 years old. Jason, a proud Christian, had also just enrolled at UCC. Jason's family told CNN that Jason was very proud of himself for going back to school, and he felt that he was finally on the right path. Lawrence Levine, 67 years old. Lawrence was the assistant professor of English, who this was the one that was first shot and killed by Chris Harper Mercer. Friends say that Lawrence loved fly fishing and listening to the blues. Serena Dawn Moore, 44 years old. Serena was the devoted mother of three children and was in the third semester of her business studies degree at UCC. In a statement, her family said, quote, "She was thrilled to enroll. She counted it as a direct answer to prayer. She praised the Lord for opening doors for her to pursue a degree in business." In the wake of the tragedy at UCC, The state of Oregon passed a law in 2017 which allows a family member or member of law enforcement to file for an extreme risk protection order. This order, if accepted, prevents those who are deemed to be an imminent threat to themselves or others from purchasing a firearm for an allotted amount of time. If this law had been enacted years earlier, it may have saved many lives. Chris Harper Mercer was free to buy as many guns as he wanted, and under Oregon law, only a person who has been involuntarily committed is not eligible to purchase a firearm.
Not okay.
And that's the end.
I feel a little culpable in this. Am I wrong?
I don't know. It's hard to say.
I guess if you had an activity that you found that your son enjoyed and you enjoyed and it was something to be do with them, I get that. However,
but okay, the Columbine's parents, are they culpable? I mean, they knew about things. They knew a lot of things.
Parents never think this is going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen. You might suspect it and you might not want to believe it. And so you ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
That happens with a lot of things mm-hmm. that your kids do, you know.
I agree.
My youngest child's getting bullied right now, and the bully's parents aren't seeing it. And that's nothing as damaging as shooting up a school.
It's not, but it can be. That it's not for your case, but it can be. And that's the whole problem. A lot of parents seem to think their kids are perfect, but they're not. This just happens all the time. All right. of that, you know, and it's you and I have talked about this. Your daughter is really strong and she's got a good background and a framework to work upon. But there's a lot of kids This would mm-hmm. crumble them. And they're the ones that are going, they're either going to be a bully or they're going to, you know, have just the stress will get to them, eating disorders or, you know, getting pregnant at 15 because they're looking for somebody to love.
Yeah. Just want to say, my family always owned guns. I've always been around guns. I do not believe that anybody should ever, quote, take away the guns. But I also think there really needs to be some guidelines here. Like, he went to a special school. He had anger issues. There were a lot of signs that mm-hmm. probably would have kept him from getting a gun. The kid that blew up the FedEx station not too long ago, if there would have been proper background checks, he probably wouldn't have gotten his gun either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know.
Mental illness and guns, they don't mix.
They don't. They really don't.
So it's, you know, I mean, they're either going to kill themselves or they're going to kill others. It's only going to go one of two ways.
It's just so frustrating to keep hearing about these senseless shootings and people are afraid to take action about it. You know, like Martha. I said, once again, I don't believe that they should be taken away, but I firmly believe there's a lot of people that should not have them. I know a lot of them that I don't feel safe having.
Yeah, like who? Name names, Jen.
Well, first of all, there's such and such down at the Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. It's shameful.
It is. And it's just so sad that you wake up in the news and it's like, oh, wow, there's another one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the callousness of starting to, you're like, oh, there's another one, instead of mm-hmm. being devastated that it happened, which is terrible. It's a, you know, us seeing, oh, there's another one, and then being not okay with it, but not shocked because you mm-hmm. knew it was going to happen anyway, you know? All right, good job, Jen. Yeah. And who do we...
And great job, Kia Leeson, for her research. She did an awesome job with research, and I'm so happy that her sister was safe.
Thank goodness.
And also, I want a big shout out and thanks to Emma Tranter. I'm sure I'm pronouncing her name wrong. She is the host of the True Crime Podcast, True Crime Witch Podcast. She helped me get everything written up and everything for episode. Yeah, she was a big helper. Had a lot of things going on that I haven't been able to really get down and dirty and write. So she's been a huge help to me.
She's been a pitch hitter, Jen, I think is what that pinch hitter.
I believe so.
Pinch hitter.
Yeah.
That one.
She
yep.
comes in a pinch. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I don't do
And
sports.
I thank you both very, very much. Awesome job. Sad, sad story.
You know, as a teacher, we have done countless drills. And I know that you, with your baby daughter, she was devastated and it gave her a little post-traumatic stress from having one. I do remember we had a lot of the times the kids are joking and stuff, but this time it was the principals and police officers came into the school and you had to do everything. And they came and jiggled the doors and they were screaming, they were shooting blanks and it freaked. This could happen at any time. I mean, teenagers are, you know, similar to this story. You just, they're a little unpredictable sometimes and there's, you know, causes for things they do. I don't think they understand fully that the outcome of what they're doing. I don't know if they fully can grasp that they're ending all these lives, or maybe they do and they don't care. I don't know.
One of, and I'm going to link it in the show notes here. One of the articles I read that was from the NEA, they spoke about how that, yes, active shooter drills, although necessary, some of them are causing more harm than good. And that solidifies how I felt with my youngest, how it was an unannounced one. They didn't know it was a drill. They thought it was absolutely happening. Mm-hmm. And her little second grade self thought for sure shit she was going to die that day and she would never see her mom and dad alive again. They're just saying how it's not cool for mental health reasons for kids. It's causing PTSD and
it is.
It's bad.
But it's also it's a sad state, but it's also necessary. So, you know, we used to do them all the time, a couple times a year, and they went back on that. And we don't as often, maybe one every other year to try to get the kids. But it's also the kids have to know what to do. And they change. They go, you know, it's like you're going to shelter in place. No, but if you think you can make a run for it, run for it. So for instance, my classroom's at the very end of the hall. It's right next to the door. If there were, you know, shooters in the building, I personally think I'd make a run for it because I park on that side. But then there's also the case that the active shooters count on that and they're waiting at doors to knock you off when you run out. So it's all, I mean, who knows? Everything's different. You don't know. I guess the bottom line is you don't know what you're going to do in the stressful situation. I mean, things happen. Look at the Florida school where the police ran the other way. Like it just, you don't know how people are going
to
act.
You have to remember that even though it says protect and serve, they don't really have to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to keep the peace. The whole shooter drill thing, I know it's a needed thing, but at what price for those young kids? I mean, because they're scared. I mean, they have a hard time sometimes telling reality from fiction anyway. It's
I don't know.
So
it's awful.
Sad.
It's all I got
to
say about that.
I hate the fact that we even have to do it at all. I mean, it's
totally
a shame. But anyway.
On that note, yeah, that's great. Good case. Interesting and heartbreaking all the same.
Heartbreaking. Ooh. I cannot imagine
maybe
being
we just meet
one of the survivors in the schoolroom and in that classroom. And
how could you ever, like, I would crawl in bed with my mom and never leave. Seriously. I'm not leaving. I'm here. I'm good. I bring my kids with me and that'd be it. I'm done. And we're not leaving the house. We're going to Instacart all the groceries, Amazon.
Have somebody else get. Oh, it's amazing. The survivors, just amazing. Everybody, how strong they are and
something else. Well, good job, Jen.
Even fathom it. Well, good job, Kia and Emma, too.
Truly. Anything else new? We want to talk about anything before we close this out?
Actually, this past weekend, I went to a convention called the Oddities Convention here in St. Louis. I had so much fun. It was interesting, to say the least. They had so many cool things. Lots of taxidermy, lots of skulls, animal skulls, lots of wet specimens, which are dead animals in formaldehyde in jars, like you'd see in a mad scientist studios. But lots of really cool artwork, like especially for me. If it's weird, I'm going to love it. If you don't know, my house is filled with heads, not in a serial killer type of way, but I like to collect old wig stands from reproductions of the wig stands from France and stuff. You do collect dog fur on your upper lip. No, kidding.
There too.
But the stranger things, the better. And one of the things I picked up is a really, really cool vampire killing kit.
Oh, you bought that? I didn't know you bought that.
Yeah, I bought it. It's not actually a kit. It's a shadow box you hang up on your wall. My husband pinned it as a Mother's Day present, but I think he wanted it just as bad as I did.
So where are you going to put that in the house?
by the fireplace, right by the baby Jesus statue that I have.
Of course you are, just
in case. But the guy who did it made everything except the Bible that he's got put in there. He made the jars and he made it look old. He made the wooden stakes to put in there. But it has on the very bottom in like old Gothic letters, in case of emergency, break glass. And hanging off the side of it is a little metal hammer so you can hit it in case you need a stake.
Just in case. You never know. You never know when that vampire's going to pay you a visit in the middle of the night.
But it's got vials for holy water and garlic, and it's got candles, matches. It's actually really cool.
Put this on the...
I will. When this airs, thing. I'll go ahead and I'll put it in our Facebook group.
Yeah,
and there's also this woman that makes these neat dioramas using train parts. Not the train parts, but when people
villages.
Are really into trains.
Yeah, like the homes and the houses. Cars.
Yeah, she had one that was so amazing, but just couldn't afford it. But it was a house, like one of the little houses, and then
from like the 50s, I would say.
Yeah, it was a mid-century home with like the little Hot Wheels car to the side. And then as you go to the back outside, there's one of the little figures, and he's digging in the yard, and he's dug a grave, and inside the grave is like a dead body. It's just for, you know, somebody who's been in true crime or who likes true crime, it was really, really cool.
It's cute. You could totally do that.
I don't know. To make that landscape stuff is kind of...
Nah. No, you could do it.
To make it look as cool as she did it, I don't know.
Practice, probably.
But I'll also link that at the Facebook group when this episode comes out. So.
Yeah, very good. All right, Jen, until next time, and all you guys out there, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
And bye-bye.
Love ya. Some sources cite that Harper Mercer was discharged because the U.S.